Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Sports Odds and Ends. I am one of your hosts, Jay Veazey, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host, Kaz. How are you doing, Kaz?
I'm doing doing better than Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, all right. I wanted to come up with a better joke to include the fact that Derrick Rose is now back with the New York Knicks. With your New York Knicks, traded from DJM's Detroit Pistons, but I couldn't come up with a good one.
Yeah, so. Not sure how I feel about that one. Like, we kind of mentioned this before, right? We kind of mentioned possibility of this happening, and now it's happened. And we were talking about the fact that one of the big things the Knicks are lacking is kind of that veteran leadership thing, right? They don't really have that because it's a majority young roster, or a lot of guys who have been six men or no men in other places. So that's probably, I think, the biggest thing that somebody like Derrick Rose would add to that team is somebody who a lot of these younger guys could actually look up to and can kind of help them out, because he's done that the last few years in most of the teams that he's been on, Minnesota, Detroit, so on. Like,
that is one thing a lot of the younger players on the Pistons really said, that they really loved having Derrick Rose as a veteran mentor, especially rookie Killian Hayes before his injury, and some of the other younger guys, that having Derrick Rose there was really something big. And Rose even said at the beginning of the season that he understood that the Pistons are going through a rebuild, and he probably wasn't going to be staying there for much longer. But for the time that he was there, him and Blake Griffin, for that matter, understood that they were being the veteran leadership on the team to talk about and show them how to be an NBA player and everything that goes into it. So it sounds like that's something that will be good for the Knicks, because Derrick Rose is still a pretty productive player. He is, and I was saying this to you, Kaz, he is at worst a sixth man, at worst. Mm-hmm. And he still has moments and bursts where it's like he's still Derrick Rose. Yeah. He's 32. We all know about his knees, but he's still got the quickness. He's still got the speed, and he can be your sixth man. The general idea was he would definitely be a sixth man on a contender, or be a bench spark plug on a contending team. With the Knicks, he would definitely be like a veteran leader, most likely a starter. So I think that it's a pretty good deal for the Knicks. I'm sure Tom Thibodeau's happy. I'm guessing he blew up half of Manhattan to try and get Derrick Rose back. But, Kaz, I would love your opinion on the fact that the Pistons, along with the second-round pick that they originally had, they got that back from the Knicks and Dennis Smith Jr. There was talk about Frank Ntilikina, who I'm really not sure is actually good. And I feel like kind of the same thing about Dennis Smith Jr. I'm just asking, like, he's been around a couple of years now, so is he good or not?
He is like the best descriptor. He's the pop of grease when you're making bacon. Like, you don't expect it. It happens very infrequently, and you don't have any real determination on when it's going to happen or where it's going to happen. And I think you also think he doesn't know when it's going to happen or where it's going to happen. So it's one of those things, right? I don't think he's necessarily bad. I just think he's hella streaky. Like, and I think even for himself, it is kind of a flash in the pan. Like, he goes out there, he probably feels good, and then it doesn't end up being the game he expects it to be, and then some nights he goes out there and he thinks he's going to hit shots and he hits shots. So it's really one of those things where like it's really weird. I will say this holds no regard, but because this is the fly by night sports show, anytime I load up NBA 2K, those are usually the first two people I trade. Like, just because of that, like they're pretty much trade bait. That's kind of the reason they've been on the Knicks, and that's why they're there. And I'm surprised they've held on to them this long and haven't traded them away.
See, the thing I heard about Frank Ntilikina is that he's really good defensively, mm-hmm. not much else. The thing I heard with Dennis Smith Jr. is that he's still got the athleticism that he had in Dallas, but he hasn't really done much with it. However, the thing about the Pistons right now is that he's only still 23. And just about everybody on the Pistons, save for Blake Griffin and Wayne Ellington, pretty much that entire team is under the age of 25. There's no pretense or secret about what the Pistons are doing. Mm-hmm. Also, they have Josh Jackson, who is another reclamation project, who seems to really be turning it around and being a contributor on the team. He's playing well enough to be a regular part of the Pistons rotation in this. So, I don't know, maybe this will be another reclamation project. Maybe Dennis Smith Jr. can have kind of the rebirth to his career in Detroit. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing it out there because he wouldn't be the first guy to come to the Pistons after kind of not doing much anywhere else and then mm-hmm. finding a better career for himself. So,
I mean, that's one of the things we constantly say on this show, right? Especially for basketball players, right? Sometimes a change of scenery changes your career. It's just one of those things that is just true. Like you might be nothing but a six man on one team, and then you get to another and you become an all-star. It happens. So sometimes a change of scenery is what a person needs.
Both these teams have pretty good coaches. So I know we talk a lot of shit about Tom Thibodeau sometimes.
Well deserved.
His minutes rotation and and him running players into the ground, but he's still pretty good at player development. So I think in any exchange of, and Dwayne Casey is also former coach of the year. So anytime there's an exchange of young players in a situation like this, I think we can at least hope that there's still a chance for both players to grow. I guess maybe with Derrick Rose, you know what you're going to get with him, but he's also, you know, reunited with his old coach. I think he's reunited with Taj Gibson. So this is,
who's another person back that together again. I was assuming was just trade bait on the Knicks and has still been there for, I think, 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah. And well, you're going to get Joe Campbell and you're going to get
a lot of like Pistons Twitter was like really jonesing for Frank Ntilikina. Do you think he's good? Like, really?
No, but the same thing happens with a lot of Knicks fans that I don't understand. A lot of Knicks fans seem to have gravitated towards Frank. I can never say his name. Like a lot of Knicks fans have gravitated towards him, whereas like for me, I gravitated towards kind of some of the other younger players on the Knicks that. And I never understood it. You know what I mean? I think, weirdly enough, I think Knicks fandom is so broken that they gravitate towards like the weird in some way, shape, or form. Like they don't gravitate towards the things like I think that they should or other NBA fans think they should, but like they just gravitate towards broken at this point.
Yeah, you're. It's small market fandom at this point because anybody who shows any shred of being different could potentially become great. Mm-hmm. And you're just grasping at every possible shred you can find to give you hope. And there's also, I think whenever you switch a front office, So now you got Leon Rose running things. Whenever you switch that, then your fan base splits. Half of them still believe in the shreds of the old dynasty, or not dynasty, the old regime that brought in all these young guys. So you still believe in those guys because you don't want to feel like that pain, all of that was not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so sometimes you just latch onto those guys, but then the other half is just like, trade all those players. They're from the dark times. They're trash. Trade them all, get rid of them all. And then they just, those two halves just go to war with each other for a couple of years,
yeah,
until the new regime has time to actually cycle all those players out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what you're going through right now. I would like to think that the Kings are on the other side of that. Both the Knicks and the Kings are actually pretty close to each other in record right now. And the Knicks are at 11-14 and currently holding a playoff spot. Are probably one of the surprises of the East, and the Kings, yeah, are probably one of the surprises of the West. So I think both of our teams are in pretty good position right now.
And here in Detroit sports, we have fully adopted the word retool. Not rebuild, yeah, retool. New Lions GM Brad Holmes, who we'll talk about later, has used the word retool. And Troy Weaver has also used the word retool, not rebuild. So we're getting used to that word around here.
Yeah, I think with the record of 5-18, which is the worst in the NBA, I think there was a lot of questions when you guys made all your front office moves in the off season, all of the free agency pickups that everybody was questioning, like, we don't understand how all these pieces are supposed to fit together. And I think the answer clearly is they weren't. You guys are just grabbing assets, right? And
right, pretty much. But like, the young core that Troy Weaver has drafted is already like making an impact, save for Killian Hayes, who's hurt.
Grant is doing well.
I hate using this as a term generally, but watching the Pistons play, they are better than their record looks, even now, because all of these games they're losing, just about all of them, they have been within 10 points or less. Just for example, the 1-1 series with the Lakers, they are tied 1-1. And with the game that the Lakers won, it took them to double overtime. So they are not winning games, but they are hanging in really tight with just about every game. So it's, you kind of see what might be forming.
Yeah, so that's good because that gives you hope, but also you rack up all these losses for tanking purposes, which I know I'm very anti-tank on this show, but I think if you're still doing player development at the same time and you can see the hope there and it's not just loss after loss after loss for no reason, or I should say it's not just blowout after blowout after blowout, then I think you can, I'm okay with that kind of tank because that's kind of just
and I'm really okay with that too. I'm really okay with that too because there are players like Isaiah Stewart and Sadiq Bey who are really becoming like contributors, and they were just drafted. So you kind of see the beginnings of the team growing, and that's really cool.
Yeah, and it's like you're making young decisions for the purposes of developing these players. So sometimes that means giving them more minutes than they would be if you're trying to win every single game. So there's at least a purpose to it, and the purpose isn't just lose over and over again. It's develop these guys. And so I think we could be, you know, put Detroit on your radar 2 or 3 years from now, because everybody's retooling there, as DJM said. All right. I tried to stretch that out a little bit so I could talk about the Kings being good a little bit, just because that doesn't happen very often. But let's move on to the big story of the week. It was the Super Bowl yesterday.
Yep.
And I think we all picked the Chiefs to win this game, and we all missed on that one.
Yeah, because I think everyone else picked the Chiefs except for the Chiefs' offensive line.
That's a good point. According to Next Gen Stats, Patrick Mahomes ran a total of 497 yards before his passes.
Yeah.
So there were some getting chased.
Because of that, there were some really weird passes that still almost got caught, but ended up in really weird, weird places. And yeah, and I would say,
talking so, like Brett Favre, Tony Romo type passes, where, you know, he's running around like a gunslinger. We're talking about like that plus a couple diving passes.
Yeah. Just diving, people holding on to his jersey, him spinning around in circles while he's falling through the ground, throwing it for like 40, 50 yards.
Yeah, and these passes hitting his receivers in the face mask and them not catching him. And so I feel like I watched a man try as hard as he can and have his team let him down a little bit. At the very least, the offensive line that was not able to protect him for more than 2 seconds for every play. I think, I certainly would not blame. Yes, two of their, maybe you could say that their offensive line did the best that they could because two of their starters were injured. I think they also had a player on that offensive line opt out for this season, so. If you were to see this matchup again in the Super Bowl next year, I think it would turn out a little bit differently. But for this particular edition, we can add one more trophy to Tom Brady's resume.
Mm-hmm.
This is it's kind of been talked to death in the sports world today. But yeah, Tom Brady's.
I think of all things, right? Let's just break down the Buccaneers, right? Because I don't necessarily think the Chiefs fell apart. I think a lot of this season caught up to them, right? I think that's one thing that happened to the Chiefs. That is what it is, right? But I think the more interesting story is the question, right, which started the season of Tom Brady going to the Bucs, would they be good, right? And then the moving of pieces, and then kind of the who's the better strategist, right? Tom Brady or Bill Belichick, to the point where Tom Brady brings Gronk out of retirement, right? And then kind of the initial situation of them looking bad, right? They looked real bad.
Not just bad, but disjointed, I think. They look like they were not on the same page. But really, they look like a new team that was assembled together. Mm-hmm. And so, in essence, Tom Brady was joining Jameis Winston's old team. And so he had to find a way to fit in. He had to find a way to get used to working with this coaching staff. And, and on top, I mean, he's been a veteran for so many years, so he's probably got some strong feelings out on how things are supposed to work. And now he's working with another veteran coaching staff who's got probably some strong feelings as well, and so there's probably some personality clashes. There's a little bit of is Bruce Arians trying to send Tom Brady messages through the media, all this other bullshit, and then whatever happened, they managed to work it all out. And not just Tom Brady, but there's I think every player that scored for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was somebody who was not on the roster at the beginning of this season, or at least at the beginning of free agency. You had Brady, you had Gronk, you had Antonio Brown, even their kicker was not somebody who was on the team. So it's Leonard Fournette who they signed when the Jaguars got rid of him. this was a team that was assembled while they went out and got people that could help and integrated them into their lineup almost, not seamlessly, but by the end of the year, it looked like it was seamless. They were good enough that they made you forget that the transition wasn't very seamless mm-hmm. at the beginning.
And through all of that, guys, Shaq Barrett, Jason Pierre-Paul, Ndamukong Suh, and Vita yeah. Vea really turned Tampa Bay's defense into a force. And by playoff time, Tampa Bay was maybe the most complete team in the game when the postseason came around. They might have been the most complete team all around.
Yeah, they certainly weren't the most electric, but I think at every single position they were at least above average. I would say they were good at every position, and I think being good on the defensive line was good enough to destroy this Chiefs depleted offensive line, and then they built on that from there. There weren't any weaknesses that could be attacked. This was basically a team that showed you in the Super Bowl that they were more competent than everybody else and better coached than everybody else, more prepared, and at this point, just on an average level across the team, more talented as well.
I just want to say one more thing before we move on, guys. Mm-hmm. Byron Leftwich, Tampa Bay's offensive coordinator, who both Bruce Arians and Tom Brady had said that a lot of that was him, did not get any head coaching interviews or any Zoom calls. Todd
Bowles wants him for one more year. This isn't a Belichick run operation. This is a Brady run operation.
Not according to Tom. Tom said it was Byron Leftwich, yeah. And also Todd Bowles, defensive coordinator. He had one scheduled head coaching interview with the Lions, but they canceled that one. So, yeah, those are two guys who probably should, if not in the offseason, but definitely next year, will probably get some head coaching interviews.
Yeah, I think a lot of mention has taken place over the last 24 hours about how diverse this coaching staff is. Mm-hmm. This is an all-black coordinator crew. Not just offense and defense, like you guys just mentioned, but special teams as well. They have two women on the staff. I think Bruce Arians has assembled kind of a team of overlooked coaches in a way. And the thing is, if you do not raid this coaching staff because of bullshit reasons like, you know, racism, that, if you're an owner, I think the rest of the league is kind of caught up on this, but if you're an owner and that kind of, even if it's a subtle thing, if that is still your hang up, this staff is going to stay together and they are going to continue to destroy everybody else. So more than any other, you know, if anything, raid this coaching staff for that purpose. These guys deserve jobs. Todd Bowles is a former head coach. He was the coach of the Jets I guess they decided to get rid of him and hire Adam Gase instead, even though Adam Gase proved over and over again that he was terrible. If Adam Gase can get two separate head coaching jobs upon the fact that he was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator for one good year and one okay year, then somebody like Eric Bieniemy should be able to get a job based off of being Patrick Mahomes' offensive coordinator. Somebody like Byron Leftwich should be able to get a job based off of being Tom Brady's offensive coordinator for this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd Bowles should be able to get another head coaching job based off of running a Super Bowl winning defense and taking down the chosen one in the Super Bowl. This is the worst loss of Patrick Mahomes' career, and mm-hmm. it wasn't all his fault. And I think yeah, Todd Bowles gets a lot of credit for it. Pretty much everybody on that Tampa Bay defense came to play, prepared.
Yeah. I'm gonna say this, and then I'm gonna start posting it all over Twitter within like the next few days. But I think now, for most fly by night sports fans, right? Tom Brady is just the better in game, you know, in the game, off the field strategist players that there is. He's better than LeBron. He's just better.
I think it's just way too hard to compare across sports. I don't want to participate in this goat of goats discussion that's going around right now.
See, this isn't a goats of goats discussion, right?
I get what you're saying. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, this one is no. This is a legitimate conversation that happens in the fly by night sports community, DJM. It is the. It's not even a hating on LeBron. It's who is better at doing all of these things that these type of players do, right? LeBron and Tom Brady have been a lot more talked about in the same air because of these types of situations, right? Like there's no other reason that Gronk comes out of retirement except to play for Tom Brady. Right. There's no other reason. Like Antonio Brown also wants, when he gets his chance, wants to go back to except to play with Tom Brady. Right. He gets the opportunity to pull strings just as much as LeBron does. So now it's okay. Who's better at pulling the strings within their realm is become the discussion. It's not even a hating on LeBron thing. It has nothing to do with hating on LeBron. It's who's better at doing this thing.
You're talking about like orchestrating front office moves to assemble a good team around them.
Yes.
I can kind of see that.
Yeah. It's a conversation that has been happening in like the background once Tom Brady didn't, and then they started to look good. People were like, oh man, is Brady a better, like,
a better shadow GM.
Yeah,
LeBron.
Yeah, because people understand, right? A lot of Brady's career is kind of, even though he's poised to be one of the greatest quarterbacks that faced, a lot of it is shadowed by Bill Belichick, right? Being strategist. But it's like, oh, now that this has happened.
Yeah, I think I can kind of see what you're saying. I think. To me, just in my mind, the move that sticks out is just you know, Kawhi Leonard somehow orchestrating a Paul George trade behind the scenes.
Yeah,
but other than that, I think LeBron has had quite a few misses when it comes to players that have joined his team or players on his team that he's managed to get massive contracts that have, you know, kind of the Tristan Thompsons of the world. Yeah. But I think that suffers from the fact that LeBron is just trying to take care of his friends. And certainly I think you could put Rob Gronkowski into that category as well.
Yeah.
I think, and maybe Antonio Brown as well, because I think they became friends during the short time that Antonio Brown had in New England. But I think ultimately, I think Tom Brady is, He's doing this for himself, and he's doing this because he's got a chip on his shoulder trying to prove that he can still play this late into his career. He's certainly not talking retirement yet. He already confirmed yesterday at the end of the game during the interview that the interview where he was given his fifth Super Bowl MVP, that he's not retiring. And I think he wants to keep winning and proving that he can keep doing this late into his life. And so he's willing to bring whatever talented people he can get to come to this team and win those championships with him. A bunch of people got their first championships here. You know, not just the coaches we mentioned, but Ndamukong Suh, Leonard Fournette, and then, you know, a couple other lesser known names like Blaine Gabbert, Drew Stanton, all these people that were on this Bucks roster or joined this Bucks roster hoping to contribute. LeSean McCoy has now won back-to-back Super Bowl championships while not having played a single play in either of those games. So he was active for last night's game and backing up Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette. And but you know, he's got two rings now. And but all these other people have won. They've managed to contribute to the team, even if they're not playing a lot, and some of these guys are playing a lot and contributing their veteran leadership to the team as well. So this last year, this was a young upstart team that I think just barely missed the playoffs. Maybe if it hadn't been for Jameis Winston's 30 interceptions, they would have gotten further. But this was, I think this was already a talented team. And as soon as Tom Brady chose to come to this team, I think everybody figured that there would be some sort of upgrade. We just couldn't fathom how much of an upgrade it would be. And I don't know until they started adding these pieces that this was a Super Bowl contender, but they added so many of them that we couldn't quite ignore that. And maybe some of us wanted to write that off after, I mean, some of us, meaning me, wanted to write off their chances when they got out of the gate a little bit slow. But when you have a bunch of veteran guys, I think they do a good job of piecing these things together and figuring out how to make these works, because these guys are professionals. Even Antonio Brown managed to buy in, and he doesn't buy in anywhere. So, mm-hmm. He got a ring out of that as well, even though he's still kind of acting like a baby and trying to act like he's a victim in all this. But
one last question before we move on. TB12 diet, yay or nay?
No. No.
All right. Guess it's just me.
No.
Guess it's just me.
Easy no.
Even if it's working for Brady, just no. It's
all right. Go to the rest of the league.
All right. So before last week, I think, with Tom Brady playing well, I think there's now kind of a focus on the quarterback market again. It's kind of weird because this is obviously the most important position in the game, but now we've got a lot of teams around the league trying to figure out their quarterback situations, trying to figure out whether their guys are the guys that they want to stick with long term. We've got Deshaun Watson trying to force his way out, and so now a lot of teams trying to trade for him. And we had talked about Matthew Stafford being on his way out in Detroit, and so he was traded, and I feel like this kind of sets the market a little bit, or it anchors the market for what might happen in a Deshaun Watson trade. But the Lions traded Stafford to the Los Angeles Rams and got back two first round picks, 2022 and 2023, one third round pick from this coming draft in 2021, and the Rams quarterback Jared Goff, who I think people have soured on a little bit. So once this trade becomes final, I think this will be the first time two former number one overall picks have been traded for each other, a young one being Jared Goff, and then an older one being Matthew Stafford. But Stafford is still, you know, when you compare him to Tom Brady, he's still young. He's like 10 years younger than Brady. Yeah. So he's still got plenty of life in his career. This is a lot for the Rams to give up.
But not only
are they getting Matt Stafford, they are also getting rid of Jared Goff and Jared Goff's contract. So I think this is a pretty fair trade, I would say.
General consensus around here is that it was a fair trade. Giving up Matthew Stafford and getting some draft picks for it. A third round pick this year and a first round in 2022 and 2023, along with Jared Goff, who I'll get to in a second. Brad Holmes, the GM of the Lions, also said that The team is retooling, and Matt Stafford and the Lions came to a mutual understanding that it was time for him to move on. And that's generally how it went down. There were some other offers that got out there, but the Rams had the best offer. And I think maybe as a joke, it leaked out that Brad Holmes asked the Rams, his former team, yeah, we'll trade you Matthew Stafford for Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald, Matthew Stafford. Straight up, one-on-one. Who says no? Apparently the Rams did. And that's where the negotiations really start, because, you know, you got to start high and then find a balance. So it worked out. Jared Goff, he's 26 years old.
Once a couple weeks ago,
we
can say about Jared Goff now. They were actually drafted in the same draft.
He doesn't have the injury problems.
That's
though.
Fair.
He
was benched in favor of
Don Wolford.
Some people that I don't know.
Don Wolford, the undrafted free agent. He was undrafted. Came out. I think he was an undrafted rookie, I think. But he had also just been recovering from thumb surgery. Is Jared Goff the Lions quarterback of the future? I'm leaning towards no, because his contract is only for 2 years, which means that right now the Lions are not necessarily beholden to drafting a quarterback in this coming draft. They probably might in the next draft, unless Jared Goff has the Ryan Tannehill reclamation story moving from Miami to Tennessee. Maybe the old change of scenery narrative will work for Jared Goff. Who knows? I'm not saying it will. I'm not saying it won't. If that happens, cool. If not, the contract is survivable. He's not going to be on like a Patrick Mahomes contract. The Rams did not sign him to that. And, he's kind of going to be, at the very least, the starter for the Lions in 2021. However that's going to go, it's really hard to say. It will probably end up with the Lions looking at a top five draft pick, because nobody's really thinking Jared Goff is going to be a superstar quarterback right now. And, you know, whatever. The Lions are accumulating draft picks, which is what people really care about right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Goff is making nearly $28 million this upcoming season, and then $25 the season after that. But if he gets cut right after that, then there's no more dead cap. So that's about the same length as Stafford's contract.
Who was making 27. Who was making 27.
Yeah.
And so, it's not a terrible contract for a starting quarterback right now. It really isn't.
Yeah, and so it's a flyer on a quarterback that's still young, kind of playing on his first big contract, or I guess his second contract, his first big one, and made it to the Super Bowl and just didn't win in the Super Bowl, and since then has not done a whole lot. It's kind of reflective of Carson Wentz's MVP season, and then the massive drop off after that. So, I think the Rams clearly thought that quarterback was kind of a missing piece. So you plug in a guy like Matthew Stafford, who is at the very worst competent at the position, and on an average day is good, and you know, maybe that Rams team who did make the playoffs this year can make the next step. I'm as a fan of another NFC West team who suddenly finds himself with the worst quarterback in the division with Jimmy Garoppolo. I kind of wish the 49ers had made this trade. Now they have to do something else.
Easy.
Yeah.
What do you say to Jared Goff for a fourth round pick?
No. No. I'm okay.
See, we always make this joke, and then one of those quarterbacks actually gets traded. Because this is what we did last time. So, Daniel Jones, any Daniel Jonesers out there? Anybody want Daniel Jones?
Yeah. Okay. But that's fine. I think there's more quarterbacks that are on the trade block than we might think. This includes Deshaun Watson, who the team is kind of doing a terrible job of acting like he's not on the trade block. But he's royally pissed, and he's trying to force his way out. But then you look at the kind of haul that the Lions got for Matthew Stafford. Even though it's for Matthew Stafford and taking on Jared Goff's contract, I think that tells you that whatever the Lions got for this, you're going to have to give up a whole lot more for Deshaun Watson. Just because a lot of it doesn't matter that he wants out. The leverage game between him and the Texans, that's irrelevant to this because he is a commodity that everybody in the league wants. He can turn any team into a Super Bowl contender almost instantly. So everybody wants this guy, and everybody is willing to give up a lot to get him. So you have to give up more than everybody else is willing to give up. But that's kind of the market that we can kind of expect. There's talk that Aaron Rodgers might want out. There's Sam Darnold questions in for the New York Jets. So we could see a lot of quarterbacks.
The New York Jets are always a question, no matter what, at every position.
Right. But Sam Darnold is kind of in the pre-Jared Goff stage, where he's young, he's still on his first contract, but DJM is asking if he's the only one who still believes in Sam Darnold, and I don't think he is. I think there's been talk around the league of teams looking to trade for Sam Darnold, and maybe a new head coach in New York wants to start his tenure off with his own quarterback that he drafts instead of somebody like a Zach Wilson or Justin Fields instead of the guy left over from the previous regime. So I think DGM is asking, do you give Sam Darnold a mulligan because of Adam Gase? And I think that's what makes him attractive, that there was something there. He was somebody who obviously had some talent, and he might have been ruined by Adam Gase. So maybe if we bring him to our team, we can turn him into the quarterback that he was meant to be. We can turn him into the second coming of Ryan Tannehill. It's those kind of things that make this enticing. But if everybody is thinking the same thing, then, because an option, a more sure thing like Matthew Stafford is now off the table, everybody's going to start shooting for these discount options. Maybe because they want to avoid having to spend as much as they might need to spend for Deshaun Watson. So we got a whole bunch of dynamics going on here. We got Drew Brees potentially retiring. So, which I guess almost a sure thing at this point. So what's going to happen with Jameis Winston? What's going to happen with Cam Newton in New England? He's probably not coming back. Philip Rivers also retired. So we've got a hole there. We've got a lot of teams that need quarterbacks and a lot of teams that not just maybe don't need them, but aren't necessarily satisfied with their current quarterback position. So we got a lot of movement coming up. Now that the NFL season is over, we got silly season to look forward to.
No, that's not going to happen. I was going to ask, could I trade my quarterback for Russell Wilson? But that ain't happening. No,
that's probably the one that's set in stone.
Come on, man. Unhappy he looked getting that award?
I think he just didn't want to be there, but he is very happy in Seattle. He's always saying go Hawks at all of his interviews.
Because he's a good guy overall. Like doesn't necessarily mean he's not happy. Just because he's a good person at heart, like that doesn't mean that. He just knows the right things to say. He's very well media trained.
Well, so
he
good
literally
people
won the NFL's Man of the Year, Kaz. Of course he's a good guy. That was
Don't
the award.
Tell me, tell Jay Feezy.
It's He's happy where he is. You see, I'm willing to say Aaron Rodgers is potentially on the block because he talks like a guy who isn't happy, even though he is the league's MVP this season. He talks like a guy who feels like they could have gone further if they had drafted somebody else besides the guy who is going to replace him. So I don't know. Maybe Aaron Rodgers in San Francisco next year.
Is the kind of guy to ruffle feathers. That's what it is. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. So, you know, moving on from the current excellent players of today to the excellent players of yesterday, the NFL Hall of Fame announced their class of 2021. And it's a pretty hefty one, at least as far as our generation goes, the people that we grew up watching. We've got Peyton Manning, we've got Charles Woodson, Calvin Johnson, Drew Pearson, Alan Faneca, Bill Nunn, John Lynch, and Tom Flores. Manning, I think, we know all about him. Charles Woodson as well. Charles Woodson came into the league at the same time Tom Brady did. So, you know, now it's been, I believe, 5 years since he retired, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Calvin Johnson, I think, was drafted in Tom Brady's third year, had an entire career in between Tom Brady's Super Bowls. You know, possibly the best Detroit Lion of all time. So, possibly. But we've got a couple other names on here as well. John Lynch, who is the current GM of the 49ers, but also a pretty fantastic safety. The last time the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won a Super Bowl. And then Tom Flores, I think, who is a name that gets thrown around a lot as a guy who should have been in a long time ago. I think the first Latino head coach in the history of the NFL. So, not only a trailblazer, but one with a lot of stock to his name as well. So, check out the article that I've linked, because the article also includes all the videos of, and I'm glad this is kind of a tradition that they kept going even during COVID times, but it's like a tradition to have the head of the NFL Hall of Fame like knock on the hotel rooms of the doors of the people that are being inducted. They kind of get like a window of time where they can kind of expect that to happen. And so now they've turned it into a whole marketing thing where just like, hey, let's come watch these guys get told that they are being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And watch them cry happy tears. So if you're looking for a little bit of that in your life, then check out that article and all of those videos. Those are always uplifting things to watch, because these are, you know, people who work so hard for their entire careers and manage to make an impact on the game. And so this is where we get a chance to celebrate them. All right. We're not going to be celebrating anybody for the Baseball Hall of Fame this year because nobody got inducted.
Their voting is a little bit different. We talked about this, right? Because we've talked about the fact that baseball is on the precipice of the drug era getting inducted, right? The steroids era, the PED era, getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And we've talked about how everyone is holding a grudge. So, like, this is the repercussions.
Yeah. And so you have to meet I think the way the voting works in the Baseball Hall of Fame is all these, anybody who gets a vote basically puts people on their quote unquote ballot. And if you end up on a certain percentage of ballots, then you get in. And I think that threshold is 75%. Kurt Schilling was the closest one. We talked about him in the last episode about people trying to change their votes. And I think he was essentially 16 ballots short this year with 71%. And a bunch of people turned in blank ballots. They just said nobody is worthy of induction into the Hall of Fame this year. Nobody that's available. And so after after all that, it's like you look at Schilling, who's at who's the closest, and he's not going to get in. He's also very bad about this, to the point where he's got one more year of eligibility, and he told everybody that he doesn't want to be on anybody's ballot next year. He's taking his ball and going home at this point. So I don't know, good riddance, whatever. But the next two closest are Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens at the 60, around 62%. So they have quite a few votes to go if they are going to cross that 75% threshold. Sometimes what happens is these guys tend to pick up momentum as they get closer to their hitting their maximum 10 years of eligibility. And then people start feeling sorry for them and saying, okay, like let's put them in. These guys deserve to be in, whatever. But usually they're a lot closer when that happens. Usually they're kind of around the 70% level, around the where Kurt Schilling is right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like these guys are so far off that that they're not going to be able to bridge that gap. And we might be seeing several years in a row of the writers just saying, nobody gets in.
I would love DJM's input too, right? Can we have a really, really, really frank discussion on what... So we know what the Hall of Fame means, right? There are guidelines and all this stuff for the voters to follow when voting for someone, right? Fuck all of that, right? Is the Hall of Fame supposed to be, in your opinion, right, as a fly-by-night sports fan of any and all sports, and I want you to integrate all sports that you can think of, is it supposed to be this Mount Rushmore kind of a thing where it's supposed to hold this kind of integrity, or is it supposed to be a representation of great moments in that sport?
OJ Simpson is still in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
So,
see, that's what I mean, right? Is like OJ Simpson being there, right? As a player is a great representation of a moment in the sport. But the things that come after don't necessarily have anything to do with the sport. It has to do with him as a person, right?
Right.
But
I think it's arbitrary. I think it's arbitrary. I Absolutely. Do think that there is a matter of how you represent the game on and off the field. I think that matters. Do I think it should matter? Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from O.J. Simpson to Reggie Bush having his Heisman Trophy taken away. Yeah, I think it matters a little bit. I think it matters a little. I do think that the idea of this person that had a great career in the sport also being an ambassador for the game does, and this might be the controversial opinion, should a little bit play a factor. There are those glaring examples like Michael Jordan, not exactly Mr. Congeniality, O.J. Simpson, as was mentioned. There were people that did not want Terrell Owens in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I'm not saying I completely agreed with them, but I was kind of like, I kind of see where you're coming from. I kind of understand it. I do think that should matter a little bit because... by all accounts, nobody wants Kurt Schilling in the Hall of Fame in baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it certainly helps her. It doesn't help that the media is petty. We talked about that to death last time. So that's a factor in it as well. So even if you can tell them whatever guidelines you want, but they're going to keep their own grudges. But at the same time, we also have people that are just ineligible because of things that they've done in the past that were maybe somewhat detrimental to the game. I think I honestly do seriously believe this, but I feel like every Hall of Fame should kind of have a Hall of Infamy section, and that's where you put the people that you don't necessarily really want to talk about. I don't see this in the same way as, you know, like all these statues that people are trying to tear down. Like, it's we don't necessarily have to celebrate these guys just because they are a part of history, but they are a part of the history. So I think we do need to at least acknowledge that this was a part of the history. We do need to acknowledge that Barry Bonds holds the career home run record, and the single season home run record, and just the fact that he was just an absolute monster at the plate. He changed the way people people pitched to him differently. There's all these weird stats around Barry Bonds and just the kind of effect that he had on the game. And he did that, you know, assisted by steroids. But I think, I don't know, it's just weird to just completely ignore that part of history. But at the same time, it is weird to induct these guys and do like entire ceremonies around them and all this, and, you know, give them a nice fancy jacket and all that stuff. So if there was a way to kind of notarize their place in baseball history without actually celebrating them, I think that would be a nice little compromise. Maybe I'm trying to have it both ways, but I feel like there should be a place for Pete Rose. There should be a place for Shoeless Joe Jackson, those types of people, in a wing of the Hall of Fame where, you know, if you're walking through the building, you can go and see like, oh, here's all the places where the shitty Hall of Famers are, the Hall of Infamy. And I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, maybe. Like, I don't know.
I'm not really feeling that idea.
I'm just starting to come around to the fact that I think the Hall of Fame should just be a blip of historical moments in history, not necessarily celebrating the person, but the accomplishment, you know. But I don't know. I still don't even know if that's correct. You know, it's weird.
The idea of Hall of Infamy, that's just, it's kind of an idea of the idea that nothing can be celebrated. Like, there's always something that's a problem and always something that's wrong. And that just kind of, that takes away from what the Hall is supposed to be about. So I really don't agree with that at all. And I think the idea that the Hall of Fame should just be like on the stats alone, I don't really know how I feel about that either. I do think that there should be a matter of integrity to the game that should play a factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what we risk here, and maybe this is fine, but, you know, we've got an entire era of players that just don't get in. Maybe they don't deserve to get in, but now we've just kind of got this big gap where, you know, maybe at the end of, I don't know, maybe somebody like Tony Gwynn, and then just this big gap of guys where just from an entire era, nobody is in the Hall of Fame. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's the statement we want to make. But I think that's what people are worried about, that just an entire, you know, maybe decade of the league's history now doesn't get commemorated. But that said, like, obviously we're not forgetting these people. You know, Wikipedia still exists and all these other resources where we're not going to erase these people from our memories. But, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe these people just don't deserve to get celebrated. And so because of that, that's why this gap exists. And we can, and the gap itself is a part of the history. And that's something that we can speak to and explain, like, hey, we don't put any of these people in because they all cheated. So I don't know. I don't know. I I think you're starting to win me over on that. I certainly don't feel good about celebrating any of these people, and I don't feel sorry for some of these people that they didn't get in. And
I don't feel sorry about it either. I just feel like you cannot try to I guess when it comes down to it, I just feel like if you begin to parse through every person, there will be very little left. But I am okay with the gap of the PED era. I'm okay with that. If none of them go in, so be it. But I think trying to make exceptions and point out exceptions is a bit of overanalysis. There's always this extra example because this, and this because this, and that just gets down to a lot of nitpicking, and I'm just not here for that.
Yeah, and everybody's going to have their different nitpicks, but I think the hope is that on average, if 75% of the people can agree on one guy, then that's enough to get him in. And that is a very high threshold, and that results in incidences like this where nobody gets in at all. But maybe that's what people want. And anybody that wants a small Hall of Fame, a Hall of Fame for only the most notable of notable people, I think this is one way to do that. I think we're basically going to see the same thing happen next year. And
probably
the only other person above 50% was Scott Rolen at 52.9%. Everybody else is even lower. So it's going to be a while. Trevor Bauer signed a deal with the Dodgers. He is now going to be the highest paid player in Major League Baseball next year. Now adding to, we always saw all these other teams make maneuverings to try to compete with the Dodgers. Now the Dodgers fired back and signed one of the better pitchers in the league. I think he's getting paid like $40 million next year. So, I think it's a shorter contract, like 2 years or so. He is the reigning National League Cy Young winner. So a lot to get excited about in baseball as far as the top teams duking it out with each other. The last couple of years, we were a little bit worried about a lot of players not getting the big contracts that they deserved, and not a whole lot of free agent movement. Things were getting kind of quiet, but now things are heating up, and they're heating up right before right before the final season before the strike. Another trade is the Nolan Arenado trade. As kind of a non-baseball fan, you kind of just hear about these players. Nolan Arenado is definitely one of those names that I hear about on occasion, but he is one of the a fantastic player on both sides of the ball, offensive and defensive. And but just the thing that caught my attention about this trade, DGM says top 10 player in baseball. So just keep that in mind. These are the kinds of people that you should not trade away. These are like the Mookie Betts of the world, the Manny Machados of the world. Don't trade these people. Build around these people, because you need 9 players. And when you've got one stud on your team, you should build around them instead of trying to get rid of them, especially if you have them locked down to a long-term contract. But apparently the Colorado Rockies are a clown franchise, and they decided not only are they going to trade this guy away, but they are going to pay the St. Louis Cardinals $50 million to so that they can pay the first couple years of his contract. But they just want to get rid of this contract long term. This guy is 29 years old, 5-time All-Star, 8-time Gold Glove winner, 4-time Silver Slugger. He's you know, his stats are off the chart. This is a cornerstone of your franchise, but he's feuding with the GM, so the GM just gets rid of him for cheap. Not just get rid of him for cheap, but pay another team to take him. That's, I don't know, like, if I was a Colorado Rockies fan and I saw that, I would stop being a fan. Like, that's the kind of shit that is, to me, inexcusable when, mm-hmm. you know, when you are a billionaire owner getting paid a shit ton of money by fans to have, you know, to watch the team, even though nowadays we don't see fans in the stadium. But it's just like all these franchises got to print money hand over fist over and over for all these years. And then you get one bad year due to COVID and, you know, and they act like they've been poor this entire time. Like, I don't know. That's bullshit to me. And baseball owners are the worst when it comes to this stuff. And it's not like your team sucks and then you need to tank. It's, you know, you've got a piece here to work with and a piece to build around. You've got your Mike Trout and they just can't, instead of going out and putting other people in the lineup to surround him, they just gave up and got rid of their best player. And so I don't know, it's disappointing to see. And I'm calling the Colorado Rockies my clown franchise of the week. I feel like I want to do this more, call out teams for behavior like this, because it is very indicative of their intentions to just not compete and to just sit there and collect money and to throw a little shit fit whenever they're not collecting money. Owners like this don't deserve teams. They should have to sell their teams to other owners who are willing to actually compete and treat their teams like they actually want to build them into contenders. So, mm-hmm. I don't know if the other baseball people on this show want to chime in with, maybe I'm being a little bit too harsh on them, but that was my initial feeling when this trade broke a couple weeks ago, and
it's,
that's still how I feel about it now.
I was dumbfounded when Nolan Arenado got traded. Just why? You have a franchise player. Like, what are you doing? Unless you are actually getting ready to sell the team and you're trying to go on the cheap, what are you doing? That was kind of the idea that some people had about Chris Illich with the Tigers after Mike Illich, his father, passed away. They started trading players, bringing the salary cap down, and we're all just kind of waiting for Miguel Cabrera's contract to fade into oblivion, or he might retire. But there were some rumblings like, does Chris Illich want to sell the team? But no, it's just been a retool. So unless you, like, Nolan Arenado was a legitimate superstar in baseball. Like, he was mm-hmm. one of those guys. And there's no reason to trade him, especially if he's locked up. He's a guy people pay to see. If you're worried about generating the revenue, he's a guy that people pay to see. It was like Justin Verlander in Detroit. He is a box office draw. Mike Trout is a box office draw. Mookie Betts is a box office draw. Nolan Arenado was a box office draw in Colorado. You traded away a guy who literally generated revenue for you. That's the thing that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, and that's kind of why I'm fixating on the he feuded with the GM, because that's literally the only explanation that makes sense. And if that's the case, if you're the GM that he's feuding with and you get rid of him for cheap like this, then I don't know, that's very bad very bad GM work, because as we explained in, you know, when talking about football trades, when you have a guy like this that everybody wants, then it should become an auction and you should be able to get a better offer than this. We don't know yet who the prospects are, or maybe we do, but they're maybe not big name enough for us to really care about them. But it's, I don't know, it just feels very anti-fan to do something like this. And and then you contrast that with other teams like, you know, like the Dodgers or the Cardinals or the Padres or the Mets, who are going all in. It's like, it's just on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. And it doesn't look like there's a long-term plan to go along with this, because it's just blow it up when you didn't even really need to blow it up. And, you know, trade away the one good thing about your franchise. So now you have no good things. And so now why should anybody care at all? All right. Somebody who I hope is going to be a better owner is Naomi Osaka, who has bought a stake in the North Carolina Courage NWSL team. She kind of joins this. We've talked over and over again about athletes starting to get into ownership a little bit. And so so the NWSL is kind of a hotbed. The WNBA is a bit of a hotbed as well. I think there's rumblings of an ownership group forming around buying the Atlanta Dream. There's, I think, I'm really happy to see this, because it feels like kind of an old boys club at the top of so many of these ownership groups. So the more that we see athletes kind of stay in the sport and take the money that they made to turn it into larger fortunes, or maybe pool their money together to get involved in different ownership groups and ownership operations. Kind of the Derek Jeters of the world, becoming the figurehead of the Miami Marlins ownership group, things like that. And Naomi Osaka is just in her early 20s, and she's got the foresight to buy in on the ground floor of something like this that we all kind of expect to grow a little bit more. And part of why we expect that growth to happen is just because we see moves like this where so many people are excited about getting in on the NWSL. The ownership group that's forming in LA with Angel City, Sacramento is getting a new team, and they're being owned by the same MLS group that is getting an expansion team as well. So it's a lot of things are happening with the NWSL, and I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see this growth. Things can still get a little bit rocky with kind of the Utah team moving to Kansas City, but Utah's getting another team back. So that's so I think that'll be rectified. But just the market seems to be strong. Everybody wants an NWSL team. The Courage in particular have the largest youth to pro club in the entire country. So maybe that's part of what was appealing about the North Carolina Courage in particular. But it's cool to see an athlete, maybe the highest profile female athlete of today, who I think made roughly $38 million last year, start putting her money into something that can grow. And you know, maybe in 10 years or 20 years, we can be talking about moments like this as, you know, this is where Naomi Osaka started to grow her fortune. In the same way that we talk about, you know, Michael Jordan buying into the Wizards as that sort of moment as well from so many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So one other team that's kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum is Fenerbahce in the Turkish league.
Yeah.
They are struggling for money. They are $630 million in debt, which is about 519 million euros. They're constantly getting sanctioned by governing bodies for violating financial fair play rules and accumulating too much debt.
Yeah, but I was reading up on some of this. Like, they're just fuck it, spend it. And it's just like, you don't have it to spend.
Yeah. But they're still able to, I mean, they're kind of one of those historical teams, so they still manage to get big names. And they're kind of one of the teams in Istanbul. So, they divide up that massive city into different teams, and Fenerbahce is one of them. They managed to sign Mesut Ozil from Arsenal, who was kind of phoning it in the last couple of years. But he's a guy who is making a shit ton of money playing for Arsenal. I don't know how much he's making playing for Fenerbahce, but it's bad enough that they basically, as soon as he signed, they asked fans via text message to donate some money so that they could afford to pay his salary. It's not specifically to pay a salary, but they wanted to leverage just the new signing as, hey, please donate money to the team because we need it. And so it's kind of a strange approach. And basically now everybody's linking that together as they're basically crowdfunding the signing of a player. I can't think of any other instances where I've seen this happen before. The closest I think is kind of this weird ownership situation that they have in Green Bay with the Packers, where fans can buy stakes in the team, but they only really use that to pay for stadium upgrades. So I think that's just kind of a way that they can raise money for that. But other than that, I think I haven't seen a team, at least not a top level team, try to ask their fans for money in a situation like this. Normally you have to go out and play well, and then that gets people to buy tickets, and that's how you make your money, or get sponsorships or do all the other things that, that teams have to do to, in order to make money, instead of just directly asking your fans for money. DJM brings up, because Little Caesars is so kind of ingrained in the Detroit area, but yeah. And in the kind of Detroit ownership groups, maybe if you buy Little Caesars pizzas, then that can help pay for Miguel Cabrera's salary. But I think that those are still kind of indirect. This is kind of the most direct incident I've seen of a team asking for fans to keep them afloat. And maybe there are other examples. If there are, then hit us up on Twitter. I'm at JVZ, Kaz is at King Kaz, DJM is at Call Me DJM. That's our show for this week. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com if you want to find links to all of these stories. Definitely check out the Hall of Fame ones, since we spent a lot of time talking about those. Patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to support the show financially. We're not above asking for money, but this show will keep going whether we get it or not, since we love talking to you guys. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next time.